Today's program was brought to you by Eating Tools, unique handmade eating and cooking tools. For more information, visit eatingtools.com.
I'm Allison Kane, and welcome to In the Sauce, a podcast about building consumer brands from the ground up. I love doing this show because I get to interview everyone from production gurus to marketing and social media mavens, anyone who can guide me on this crazy journey. This is the story of building Haven's Kitchen sauces, but it's also the story of every growing brand because we're all in the sauce. Today, I'm speaking with Tekla Schaefer, marketing magic maker, as in head of marketing, at Tony's Chocolonely, the big, bold, bright Dutch chocolate bars on a mission to make the chocolate industry more equitable and entirely free of child labor. Tony's is not only the market leader in the Netherlands with close to 50 million in annual sales, but also the most sustainable brand in the country. Tekla is responsible for all the marketing initiatives at Tony's and is helping spread the mission and the brand around the globe. So welcome, Tekla.
Thank you. Thank you. Nice to be here.
Yes, it's great to have you. As I was telling you right before we started recording, one of my I didn't even know how much I would enjoy doing this show when I started doing it. But one of the things I've just enjoyed the most is getting to know companies and also the people that work at the companies, but, you know, the companies a little bit better than I would have. So it was really fun researching your work. It was really fun researching Tony's and learning more about the mission and how it all got started. I never knew why the bars weren't evenly squared like other chocolate bars. And now I do. And if you guys keep listening, you will find out. So let's start a little bit with, first of all, I think a lot of people are really interested in marketing. I think a lot of brands out there are trying to figure out how to distinguish themselves from all the other brands on Instagram or in the grocery store. There's a lot of stuff out there that is, you know, competing for people's attention. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me like a lot of the people that are in marketing that I've interviewed were in psych and did either psychology or sociology, something in human behavior. So I guess my first question is, I know you grew up in the Netherlands, and were you always interested in why people behave the way that they behave? What, you know, what were your sort of plans in school and how you ended up in marketing?
Yeah, that's right. So indeed, I grew up in the Netherlands, as you can probably hear from my accent also.
Yes. I'm engaged to someone from Amsterdam. So it happens to make me feel very warm and fuzzy.
But oh, good.
Yeah.
I always try to improve my English, but somehow people can always hear that I'm from the Netherlands.
Yeah.
And I studied psychology, which my dad thought would be education to become a professional jobless person. He wanted me to study economics or something like that.
Right.
But I was just really interested in, I guess, like you say, a lot of marketeers in human behavior and not so much like disturbed human behavior, but rather normal human behavior. So within psychology, I studied social psychology and another study called cultural psychology and the psychology of religion. I'm not a religious person, but religion as such is a very interesting topic to study from a psychological point of view. So I really studied psychology from, you know, personal interest, never really thinking about what I could do with that later in life.
Right.
And I think, you know, I was lucky to grow up in the 90s when, you know, everything, you know, the economy was growing and everything was possible. So I didn't really think about doing a study that would have me end up in a good job. But then after my study, I was introduced to somebody at an ad agency. Mm-hmm. And there I was just really intrigued by how people in the ad industry also think about human behavior and what makes the normal person tick. So that's how I ended up at BBDO at the time.
It's also really interesting. I feel like I've heard this said by multiple people, and it might have been just Mad Men or something, but I do feel like there is a correlation between religion and brands.
Yeah.
And these days, especially when you have sort of this, you know, globalized world and the institutions and structures that, you know, I grew up in the 80s and 90s too, you know, all of that has kind of shifted. And now you have brands that have these tribes, you know, and people live and die by their dishwasher detergent, and they will go, you know, and they'll be out there proselytizing for, you know, their shampoo.
Yeah.
In a way that I don't really think existed until, you know, possibly the last, you know, 10, 15 years, maybe even. So I do think there's something interesting about your studying of religion, and then becoming kind of an ace marketer. So at the agency, so you were at the agency for a while, and then you went to a couple of different brands, the big one being G-Star.
Yeah.
I'm kind of curious about the lessons that you learned both on the agency side kind of early in your career, and then a couple of the lessons that you learned on the brand side that you took with you when you landed at Tony's, I guess about a year plus ago.
Yeah. So the agency that I was with, BBDO, was with another agency as well, but BBDO was with the longest time, and they have a very, very strong history in building brands. So this agency was really about branding, branding, branding. So I had a lot of different courses, and like, it was really all about how do you build a brand? How do you create these like mental like patterns in people's heads that make them remember the brand, that give people a good feeling about the brand? So I was really trained in brand building, and
so do you remember any of those? Like, do you remember anything that kind of blew your mind, or anything that you had an aha moment at some point? I know it was a while ago, but
yeah,
I think everyone kind of wants to know how we create these mental patterns for people. You know, what is the secret sauce, as they say?
Yeah, so it's I think one of the most important things is really the emotion. So I know a lot of agencies, they talk about what is the USP, the unique selling point. You need to be very precise about it, but it's also really about building emotions around the brand. And I think that is something that's really sensitive. You know, how do you make sure you choose the right images and the right words and the right, you know, ideas around a brand to build those emotional patterns. And, you know, when I started, it was a really interesting period, because the agency would do all kinds of weird things to find out what these emotional memories that people had of the brand. So when I just started, I had to do research, like, you know, make consumers choose from different animals, like which animal that represents the brand, or like Rorschach kind of tests and all kinds of funny things that we did just to find out, like, how do you create this really warm feeling around the brand? And I think when I started then at G-Star, which at the time already was a strong brand, it was for me like the moment to really, you know, prove it. At the agency, you're at the advising, the consultancy side of things, and it's also very much about communication. But at G-Star, I really learned that marketing is in everything that a brand does. And I remember really well that when I started, I think it was my first week, and I had a coffee with the CEO, and he got really angry at me because they had little bags of sugar to go with the coffee, and yeah. it had the G-Star logo on it in a different font. And he was like, this is your fault. Why is the G-Star logo on it on sugar? We don't sell sugar. This is not even our logo. And it's like, but I just work here for a week. But it's your fault that you didn't address this. You should have addressed this because you should know that this is, you know, killing our brand. And I was like, oh, okay.
Well, here's my question. Did he want no brand on the sugar, or did he want a brand on the sugar, just the right logo?
No, no brand. He was like, okay. We don't sell sugar. So that's right. it undermines our positioning.
Right.
And he was very, you know, his idea of marketing, I reported directly to the CEO, and his idea of marketing was very broad, like the way the receptionist would answer the phone, or yeah. like the bag of sugar with the coffee, or all those really? Little things he considered marketing. And he would really hold me accountable also for all those things. So although it was hard yeah. in the beginning, it did teach me. And it just, for me, it opened up such a, you know, much larger toolbox, or a much larger, you know, toy box almost, I would say, to yeah. build a brand.
Yeah. How did you organize? I mean, it's funny because, so I think everyone who's listened to sort of our journey knows that we're going to be launching in, you know, 400 Kroger stores and about 500 Target stores in yeah. just the next month. Thank you. And we are doing this sort of, you know, in June, we decided to just learn everything that we could about all of the various tools or toys in the box that we could use to build awareness, to get people connected, to reach out. You know, a lot of our old familiar tools like activations and events and in-store sampling are not at our disposal right now. Yeah. And so we needed to learn about Ibotta and couponing and, you know, how to segment our mailing list and we've been talking a lot about how everything is marketing, down to customer service, right? Yeah. Is an opportunity to market. And I guess my question is, when you're leading that, especially for such a big company, how do you divide out, you know, if it's all one big toolbox, let's say, how do you divide out, you know, the different sections of the toolbox? Do you think of it like, this is what we pay for, this is what we don't pay for, this is content, this is experience, this is how we are in the world? Like, how do you even begin to break down, if everything is at your disposal, yeah. how did you get to break down how to think about it, and where to even begin?
Yeah, I guess what's really important is to look at what are the main points of contact between you, between your brand and the consumer, which oftentimes isn't what we consider marketing, like mm-hmm. content or social right. media. Most often it's first of all, the product itself. Mm-hmm. Second of all, the point of sale.
Yeah.
And thirdly, it is often customer help. So your direct interaction with the consumer. So very often what we consider marketing aren't the key points of interaction with your customer. So right. I think
that's a very good point.
Yeah. So at G-Star, we did a project called Raw for the Oceans. It was about creating jeans out of recycled ocean plastic. It was mm-hmm. a couple of years ago. So it was really ahead of the whole anti-plastic movement.
Right.
And we thought about, you know, how do we communicate this project? And then we said, okay, the product itself is what people will see most often. Like, the product itself is the billboard. So we really focused on creating designs that would really communicate the cause, the reducing plastic in the oceans, and yeah. and really use the T-shirts of the collection as the billboard. So
right.
So really starting with product itself.
Yeah, I think actually it's funny because I think a lot of people today, it's not that hard to, you know, and people who listen have heard me say this, you know, there are plenty of agencies and plenty of freelancers who can design something that looks great, you know, with the right colors and the right font and the right vibe. But what needs to be tested, I think, and what really needs to happen a lot that doesn't always happen is it needs to go deeper than that. Because the product itself looking good, you know, is one thing, but the product feeling good and saying the right things on it that makes sense to who's buying it and filling the promise that it says it's going to have. And where, you know, I've gotten bottles of things sent to me and they are just too big to fit on a shelf. Like someone thought it was a beautiful bottle and it is a beautiful bottle, but it doesn't fit on a pantry shelf. So it's like little things like that, that we don't necessarily think of as marketing, but they are, because they're irksome if they're not smooth. And it's almost stuff that you don't notice when it's working well. And then in terms of, you know, what's out there. So you think of the product, you think of the point of sale, think of, you know, your customers interacting with you, whether that's email or, you know, DM or commenting on Facebook or whatever it is. But what about just, and this can go a little bit, I guess, into Tony's reaching people that have never heard of you before. How do you get into their psyche?
Yeah, that's a good question, especially for Tony's, because Tony's has a non-paid media strategy. Paid media, yeah. So we don't use any paid media, which for a marketeer is, of course, an extra creative challenge, I should say.
And that includes no Instagram ads.
Exactly, yeah. No paid media is no paid media, like no Google search, no Instagram ads, none of that. So, you know, on the one hand, it's a big relief because it really declutters your
toolbox.
It's just
you just take out the hammer, the drill, the screwdriver, and the wrench.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it makes things easier in a way, but it's also more difficult, of course. So, so for us, distribution and having the product on shelf is just really, really key. But the other thing is PR, is getting free publicity, and I think this is even more important for us to be able to get people to talk and write about Tony's. In your research, I'm sure you found out that Tony's was actually founded by journalists. Mm-hmm. So it was created as a project to really dive deep into the cocoa industry and find out why, what's wrong with the cocoa industry, to, you know, by creating a bar, to really find out in every step of the supply chain, what's going on. Right. And so there is this real, there are these journalistic roots to the brand, I would say, that are a driving force behind our strategy to not only create chocolate ourselves, that is created, in a better way with less harm to the people that harvest the cocoa. But it's really also very much about education and getting people to understand what's wrong in the chocolate industry. So I think that makes the brand really unique and special, is that it's not so much about we want to do it right. It's not so much that we want to create chocolate that's right. Our chocolate almost is, what I found out actually when I started working for Tony's, the chocolate is almost the merchandise to the mission of Tony's. So the bigger mission really is to change the industry. So So there's this real drive to get that story out there. So we do a lot of things to, you know, to educate people. So we have, we do a lot of Tony's talks where we talk about our mission. In the US, we have a college program where we are looking for students that have the potential to be, you know, change makers themselves, and we give them tools to start their own impact companies and kind of mentor them in that way. So we really want to get that story out there. So yeah, to create that news around the brand, to talk about, you know, what we do, is that comes really natural.
Right. It's okay. So I think we're going to take a break now. This feels like a good spot. And then when we come back, we'll talk about sort of the roots of Tony's. It only came to America in 2014, I think, right? And, you know, all of the amazing lessons that I think you're going to teach us. So we'll be right back.
Inspired by the finely crafted tools built at the hands of friends in and around custom knife making, and with a love of all things food, Abe Shaw began forging a collection of culinary tools unlike any other. Collecting and working with custom and handmade knives for over a decade, Abe has developed a deep respect and admiration for the artists, metalsmiths, woodworkers, and craftspeople behind the endless interpretations of these ancient tools that feed us, the most intimate tools in our lives. They needed a showcase, and Eating Tools was born. The curated collection of unique and extraordinary handmade culinary utensils you'll find here, along with a hand-picked selection of top-quality production-made pieces, represents a catalog of products never before assembled in one place. Many of these products can only be found at Eating Tools. Food, cooking, craftsmanship, and art are their ingredients. There's no substitute for having the right tool for the job, and Eating Tools promises to bring you just that. They think you'll agree that the food-loving visionaries behind each of their products has an eye for the tools we use every day. For more information, visit eatingtools.com.
I'm back with Tekla Schaefer, head of marketing at Tony's Chocolonely. Okay, so this is the story as I understand it. Correct me if I'm wrong. There was a journalist named Tony. He was scrutinizing the chocolate industry and basically discovered that there was not a single brand of chocolate that was producing without either child labor, farmer exploitation, and in some cases, even like full-on slavery. He basically wanted to raise attention for that and made chocolate. And what is the part where he took himself to court? What happened then?
So he said, well, if I eat and if I buy and eat a product that was actually made in an illegal way,
right,
then I should be, you know, I should be taken to court. I'm actually buying a product that I know for right. sure that it's made in an illegal way, because child labor is illegal. Modern slavery is for sure it's illegal. So so he you know, bought a bunch of chocolates, ate it, and then called the police to have himself arrested. He actually did get arrested.
For a journalist, he's also a pretty good marketer.
Yeah. And so he actually took some of the kids, former child slaves, to testify against him.
Wow.
And this was all televised. And
right.
In the end, he wasn't taken to jail because they said, well,
we have to take everyone into the country.
Yeah, exactly. Jail. Exactly. Right. So, yeah. I think. You know, in the Netherlands, it was like an eye-opener for many Dutch people. So unintentionally, the chocolate bar was sold out immediately and became a brand.
Wow.
And then after, I think, 5 years, the journalist sold it to the current owner because they said, well, in the end,
I don't want to own it. Company.
Right? Yeah, it's a whole different ball game than right. making a TV show. Yeah. So they still own some shares in the company,
right.
but they're more in the background. Yeah.
And then it didn't take very long to become sort of, a massive brand in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
Market leader in chocolate.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, certified fair trade, certified B Corp. I think it's got every sustainability stamp that you can have on it.
Yeah.
And then probably. And then what was the, I mean, was it, okay, we've now done so great in the Netherlands, let's move to other places in Europe, let's move to the United States? Like, how do you know what that process was like for the brand? I mean, it was virtually unknown here.
Yeah.
A few years ago. How did it even begin to break into this market?
Yeah, so the reason to specifically want to go to the US, because it's obviously a big leap for Dutch brands. Right. But the reason for it is that the big chocolate companies are mostly situated in the US. So, you know, from this, you know, the mission of Tony's is to actually change these big brands
to their supply chain.
Yeah, exactly. So that was the reason to move to the US. So not even so much to say, okay, we want to become a huge brand ourselves. No, we want to be there where the where we can make the most impact and where we can make change. So that's that was the driving reason to move to the US. The company started out in Portland, and simply just with increasing distribution with smaller shops. One of the things that we did was we have a choco truck touring around the States. So it's really grassroots marketing in that sense. So also not with a lot of investments, but really grassroots. And that seemed to have worked until now. We are moving to New York.
Oh,
wow. Yeah. So that's a big one. And with the move to New York, where it's part of a plan to make even more impact, and especially in the US, it's important for us to increase the issue awareness so that more people know about the issues in chocolate, because that's we believe that consumer influence can change companies, so that's a real important one for us.
As I was kind of looking into it, so for those of you who stayed on listening about the unequally divided bars, so if you open a bar of Tony's, which does feel like as much like Willy Wonka as I think in real life, it's big and thick and it has this like wrapping and it's bright. Yeah. And then when you open the bar, instead of what you're used to, which is sort of like evenly divided grid, it looks kind of like a town square. It's like there's a circle in the middle, and then there's like all these like kind of unevenly kind of par cut pieces. I thought it was like cobblestone. I really didn't know what it was, but basically it's to represent the unfair and unequal sort of treatment of people along the supply chain. That there are sort of the top of the food chain where they're making a ton of money. And then there's, at the very low end where people are working without any rights and without compensation. And the unequal pieces are representative of that. But as I was thinking about what's so brilliant about the brand is that you have this very childlike, because you're on a serious mission, a more serious mission than most brands.
Yeah.
Some brands, like, their mission is to disrupt, the chocolate chip, or, it's like they have a mission and they have a purpose, and I don't mean to sort of diminish them, but they're not trying to completely reshape the entire cacao industry, right?
Yeah.
So have this very deep, very serious purpose, but you have this very playful, very bright, happy, even the words lonely, chocolate lonely, like it's all very whimsical in a way. And I think the sweet spot is in like the tension of those two things coming together at the same time.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, you know, I'm assuming that's conscious.
Yeah.
I'm wondering what your thoughts are on how that expresses itself in different places, and how, even with such a serious mission, I mean, I'm assuming someone decided, okay, we have a very serious mission. We shouldn't make this gray,
yeah,
or brown, or whatever. So if you can talk a little bit about that, that'd be really helpful.
Yeah. Yeah, I think what the brand does really well is to kind of solve this tension between doing something that's right for the planet and doing something that's really indulgent and something for yourself. And I guess this is something I learned at the agency, like the best brands, they are able to solve this tension that other brands haven't been able to solve. So I think this is really a magic formula of Tony's. And so, and I think the current owner actually contributed even more to making it such a fun, playful brand, because when it started, the bar is actually a little bit smaller and the wrapper was shiny, not matte like it's today. Mm-hmm. And it was equally divided. So I had like the usual mm-hmm. squares, and the current owner then, you know, increased the weight, made the paper wrapper like matte.
Yeah.
And
it feels like when you're in like second grade, it feels like that like cardboardy,
yeah,
you know, paper, like the orange and the blue and the red, and you know, it's very primary school feeling in a way.
Yeah, and I think it does make you feel like a little kid yourself, you know, the bar is just a little bit too big and it makes yourself yeah. feel a bit smaller, I guess. So yeah. It is a balancing act, like when are we too just fun and happy, and do people forget about the serious mission that we're on, and when are we getting too serious and maybe use very harsh words to describe the situation in West Africa?
Right, like slavery is a big word.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is.
Have you noticed the difference in America versus in the Netherlands and the way that people sort of respond to the yeah. message?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it also has to do with the fact that in the Netherlands, as the brand was born from this very popular TV show, everyone was kind of, it was like multiple episodes they made about, you know, the coming about of the chocolate. So people were really taken along on this journey and like, okay, what is happening in West Africa? So whereas in the US, you know, people see the brand for the first time in a store, and unless you, you know, open the wrapper and read the statement on the inside, you don't have the context. So yeah, that's right. It's important to have that context and to be able, like I said, to explain to people what we do and why we do it.
Well, it's funny because even if you don't read the whole wrapper, you do get the tension. There's something that shines through that isn't just like fun, happy, silly, Tony's chocolate. Like there is something that comes through, and whether it's the unevenness of the bar or just the words that are in a little bit bigger of a font when you open up the wrapper, something's working there. And I'm trying to think of other brands that have found this sort of like yin yang, you know, where there's, because it's always, you know, I always go back to sort of ecosystems, but one of my favorite theories in sort of, it's like an ecological idea, is that there, in between two ecosystems, there's a third ecosystem that's sort of like not just the two ecosystems combined, but it's like magic. There's just like a ton of things that grow there that don't grow anywhere else. Mm-hmm. Like magnitudes, you know, whether it's like where the beach hits the rocks, or you know, whatever it is, in between is this magical space. And I think that's kind of what I'm getting at with the branding. It's like where that seriousness meets that fun, there's something that happens in that space that doesn't happen with a lot of other brands. It's like they're almost flat compared. And I'm just wondering are you always thinking about that? Whether you're, you know, whatever you're doing, are you always thinking about maintaining that? Or is that just so in the DNA that you don't have to think about it so much?
No, we do. It's a real big topic within the company all the time. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. We recently opened a chocolate bar in Amsterdam. Uh-huh. And it's really fun because it's like stepping inside of a Tony's bar, literally like a chocolate bar. It's very colorful. It's has some really crazy things on the menu. It's super fun. But then we try to find ways to still include the mission within such a fun environment. So we make it playful. Like there's a little, what's this called in English? This play things that kids play on in the park, like
amusement park rides.
Yeah.
Oh, like a Ferris wheel or a roller coaster.
No,
or,
it's like one kid sits on one side and the other on the other side. You have to balance it. Yeah.
Seesaw.
Yeah. Exactly. So there's, you know, you can sit on that whilst eating your different chocolate things, and there's an equally divided bar also with chairs in different heights, or like one is really comfortable and the other is not so comfortable, and they're like unfair games on the table. So they're like games where, you know, one person gets like five things and the other like just two, and it's so we in a fun way we try to think of ways to you know include people in
I said Ferris wheel because there's also a rumor that you guys are building an actual amusement park, a true Willy Wonka factory type of situation.
That's our biggest dream. So we have our eye on the building in Amsterdam, and the idea is that we have a place where we actually can make the chocolate, because currently it's made in Belgium, but that we can make it in the Netherlands, but that it's at the same time also a place where people can learn about the mission of the brand and like an educational place. So it has. That's our dream. That's like the chocolate bar is like a taste of it, but this would be like a real big dream come true. You know, where it should have a roller coaster, of course, and we have I think there's a video circulating also online of a sketch that we made of what we think it should look like. So that's all. In the future. So.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. So segueing away from Tony's for the last, 10 or so minutes, since you are a marketing expert and a lot of the guests, or I guess a lot of listeners who listen to the podcast aren't necessarily hiring a head of marketing anytime soon. So to the extent that you can give them advice, this would be great time. So I always kind of like to ask like three things that, founders should keep in mind, people who are building brands should keep in mind, they might not be thinking about, but that will basically make their job marketing smoother or kind of pave the way or, build awareness and connection with the brand.
I would say one is the product. The product is everything, be very particular about the design, about the message you have on your product. I think the product is your billboard. That's really your single most important thing to focus on. So be very precise on what's on there. You shouldn't be happy too soon with what you have, but be really specific about your product design and find ways how you can incorporate the message that you have into the product.
Yeah. And I'm just going to throw in there because from personal experience, we are on, I think, pouch design number four for ours. Mm. You know, we order the fewest number of pouches that we can from the manufacturer. Mm-hmm. And then every several months, we try to make them even better based on, yeah. you know, if we hear that, you know, one thing we did was, you know, an Instagram sort of story of like, why do you like them? If you like our sauces, why do you like them? Mm-hmm. And the vast majority of people said easy. They didn't say flavor. They didn't say fun. They didn't say cooking. They said easy. And so we didn't have anything that sort of alluded to that on the front, you know, on our package anywhere. So we kind of, every time we learn more about why consumers like us, we change the packaging. And I think people have to just remember that you're not going to get it 100% right the first time. Even if you pay a very expensive agency to design your packaging, you're going to want to keep iterating.
Yeah.
So don't feel like you're, you know, allow yourself to keep changing it, because it has to keep representing the people that are buying it. And you don't know who's going to be buying your product until a couple of years in.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I wanted to add to that, because we're actually going through another redesign or refresh now. And I'm thinking about investing for, you know, in some real, you know, we've never really invested that much money in design. And now it's time to. So I think that's great. The product is everything. Number two.
Everything. Yeah. Number two, like, I think in our case specifically, you know, not doing paid media, it's really about creating news, you know, to constantly think about, okay, what news can we tell about the brand? And I think for Tony's, it's in a way it's easy because we have our mission as the North Star, you know, it's the it's the mission, you know, we really want to change something. So that really helps us to, you know, create this news all the time. There's always something to say about the chocolate industry. Right. There's always a new report that's out there. But also, you know, specific flavors or specific editions or anything. I think for us to have this news calendar year round is really, really important.
Yeah. What is the main decision? I mean, you know, we just started paying for ads and things like that. And we did it because we can't be demoing, and we launched Whole Foods and we just wanted people to know what the heck we were and to like have some sort of reference for us. I understand just sort of the decision not to pay for media as almost like a values-based stance. Yeah. But, you know, is that it? Is it just like, we don't want to pay for people to know about us? Like what was the driving force between not paying for any media?
I think it started with the journalistic roots, that it came natural to the brand to, you know, focus on
stories,
on stories and news. But it's also, it's funny because my CEO said, well, our chief chocolate officer, he doesn't let himself be called CEO. He actually said, well, the, you know, all the extra money we pay to the farmers, I consider that to be your marketing budget. So it's right. also, it also is about, you know, it's
the mission.
The mission again. And it's something that we feel, we also, that we don't want to, you know, misuse that mission as some sort of a marketing trick. You know, we don't want to
use that. Well, that's interesting that you said that, because when you were talking about news, you know, there are a couple of things that my team and I do that, you know, we all just believe in and that we do as a company, whether it's donations or mentoring or whatever it is, that we specifically don't talk about or put out there or make an Instagram post saying, here's what we're doing. Because a lot of it is sort of like, you know, I don't know, signaling a bit and maybe a little bit self-serving. So I was thinking when you were saying creating news, I'm like, I wonder what kind of news we could create when we, that isn't talking about kind of how we're doing such a good job.
Yeah.
But then I was thinking, well, we could be releasing interesting things about home cooking.
Yeah.
Or, you know, trends and things that we're seeing or why people buy condiments during recessions or things like that.
Yeah.
So actually that gave me a couple of really good ideas.
Okay, good.
And then a third piece of advice.
I really like this idea of collaboration. So, you know, the collaboration is the new competition. It's my dream to do a crossover with another chocolate brand. A G-Star already was my dream to do a G-Star 501 jeans, but that never happened. I do like this idea of collaboration. And we like to look for other B Corps to collaborate with. So, for example, what we did during the... it's still a pandemic going on there. So to keep everyone like part of the Tony's team and make everyone feel still as part of the team, we sent little gifts to the team almost every week. And wow. These are all things that come from other B Corps or other companies with a mission, so that we support these other companies whilst at the same time, you know, supporting our own team. So it could be anything from organic flowers to... organic bottle of wine on the Friday or all kinds of,
nice.
Yeah, it's all kinds of really fun things. So we made a really nice, beach bag with a sustainable denim brand. So all kinds of little things that we do like that to collaborate together. And I think there's much more opportunity for Tony's in collaboration and really seeking out the, other B Corps to work together to create impact, because I really believe that, you know, post-pandemic we should strive for a better world together, and B Corps can have a very important role in that. So I think not just collaborating in terms of doing, you know, collaborate, yeah, exactly, but also collaborating in terms of, you know, how can we together approach a certain retailer, or how can we together, right, you know, do a panel together on a certain topic, or how can we together. So in the Netherlands, we recently worked together with a lot of companies to pass a law that actually makes companies be transparent about child labor and their supply chains. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think the Netherlands is actually the first country that actually has that law, which is insane.
Yeah,
but then we reached out to like big companies in the Netherlands, like Heineken or big companies like that to collaborate to get those things done.
It's interesting because in that point number three, there were like five different points. Because,
oh, sorry.
In a great way. No, it was great because... You know, a couple things. One is your team is your first consumer.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, talking about your team and keeping your team happy and safe and supported and feeling good is critical. And unfortunately, I think there's still some companies out there that are like in this like kill them, crush them, you know, blah.
Yeah.
And I don't know that that's going to work anymore.
No.
I don't know that it worked very well before, but it doesn't work anymore. So I think that's one thing that's really great. I wish that I had sent my team a present every Friday. That would have been, that would make me feel really good, but I didn't, but maybe I will. but then the other thing is, you know, this collaboration with other brands and, you know, we started off kind of very, who do we go well in a meal with? And at this point, we're just like, who shares a consumer with us? Like, we're doing a giveaway in a couple of weeks with like a chocolate company, another spread company. We've done things with like sauerkraut and, you know, I mean, we would do something with coffee. It doesn't matter. The thing about collaborations is that they're really worthwhile when you share values, because when you share values, you tend to share a similar consumer.
Yeah.
And the consumer who's buying my sauce is going to be very excited to get introduced to this new chocolate or coffee or even like bag, you know, it doesn't really matter. They don't have to necessarily make perfect sense in a meal together. Which is something that like evolved in me that I didn't really think about so much when we started all of this. And, you know, it's not about who has the bigger Instagram following or anything like that. You're building this community of like-minded brands and, you know, going back to sort of, you know, Tekla's religious study.
Yeah.
You know, which, you know, without sounding sacrilegious, like which place of worship do you want to go? Are you like going to the rock and roll place? Are you going to the sustainable place? Are you going to the fun, earnest place? You know, all of that, they're all, there's a cap for every bottle. There is a Dutch expression that my fiance, first of all, there's an expression in Dutch for everything.
That's right.
There'll be like a penny on the floor and he'll be like, it, you know, there's multiple expressions for some things. But there, what is the one with the screw on the bottle of the cap? There's something. Yeah.
There's a cap for every bottle. Yeah.
Right. Say it in Dutch.
Yeah. It's always really funny if you translate them to English, our crazy Dutch expressions.
I know. Well, they make me laugh every time. But yes, that's because, you know, don't worry about competing. There's someone out there who loves your cracker and they're going to love someone else's cracker, and there's room for both as long as they're great products.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts or anything that you wish that founders would know or that you wish that early stage companies were thinking about a little bit more as your final words?
Yeah, I think what I really learned at Tony's also is that, you know, as a company, the first question shouldn't be is how can I make money? How can I take something from the world? But rather should really be what can I contribute to the world? Like, what is my role in the community? What am I contributing to the world before I think about what can I, you know, get from the world? Like, how do I get people to pay me money rather than how, you know, how am I really servicing the community?
Yeah. I think that the era of the conscientious organization, you know, whether it's supply chain or focusing on different types of, you know, KPIs for people or building different types of boards, actively seeking out different people to represent their brand than they might have before. The pandemic has given us all a moment, hopefully, to reflect on some of that and thinking more about sort of putting back in versus extraction, you know, whether it's the environment or the community or communities, you know, in our case, you know, where we're getting ideas and recipes for the sauces and things like that. So, Tekla, thank you so much for coming on. I took so many notes. I have stars and boxes and circles and arrows. I just want to thank you so much for your time and welcome to New York. I don't know when you'll be there, but it's going to be fun to have.
Yeah, as soon as I'm allowed to visit, I'll be over here. Awesome. Yeah, hopefully soon.
We need people coming into the city, not leaving. Listeners, thank you so much. Jess, thank you for engineering like a rock star. And I'll be back next week with another episode of In the Sauce.
In the Sauce is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.